Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah. Have you ever loved somebody? The way God loves somebody. And he loves you.
Congratulate you on your show. We know that it's going to be a power-packed show, and we're glad that you are obedient to the Spirit of God and that you're ready to come out your comfort zone and bless others like you've been blessed. I see the phone lines are lit up, but we just ask that you tell us a little something about yourself and if we can get some folk on the line.
Let's see, I'm a wife and mother of four, and I just have a job with the federal government, so a lot of my experiences and, you know, kind of what I do on a day-to-day basis, I think that a lot of our callers will have similarities. I'm just, you know, someone who loves the Lord and wants to share with the body of Christ, share with others, bring others to Christ. So I am definitely blessed for the opportunity, and I will be here as long as you and the audience will have me.
All right, that's great. Well, we have an awesome topic tonight. We're talking about counseling stigmas, and we're going to turn it loose. I'm going to try to get some folk in the screen room and see what questions they want to ask, but it's all yours, Sabrina G.
First off, I want to get started, and this topic, I think, was kind of near and dear to me because of the things that have been happening in our general communities and across the country, where some of our youth have been experiencing violence, you know, violence against others, violence against massive amounts of people, and then when you get to the root of it, you find that some of these children and teens have had journals and they're writing about the things that they've been feeling, the emotions that they've been experiencing, you know, negative things that have happened within their lives. And sometimes I sit back and wonder, well, why didn't we see the signs? You know, why didn't the parents, why didn't the teachers see the signs? And if they did see the signs, then, you know, why did we not feel comfortable enough to take action, you know, whether it was from a spiritual perspective and seeking counseling from, you know, the pastor or someone within a church or someone from a professional nature. And I think that when sometimes I talk to people about counseling, because there are times when people ask me for advice and I can only tell you what I've probably experienced, but I'm not a professional. And I tell them, you know, why don't you seek some professional counseling? Take your insurance. Check to see what your options are. And they say, oh, you know, no, I don't want people to think I'm crazy, or no, it's not that bad to where I need a professional. I just need somebody to talk to. Well, why don't you think you need a professional? Because your neighbor down the street can only give you advice to what they've experienced. And sometimes that advice from the neighbor down the street doesn't sit well with you and doesn't work for your situation. So, you know, I kind of wanted to hear what the people had to say on why we think that as a community we don't take advantage of professional counseling services, and kind of how do we take steps to get back there to a community to where we think that it's more acceptable.
All right. We got a caller on the line. You'd like to talk to us? Savannah?
Hello?
Okay.
Savannah, you're on the air.
Oh, hi, Sabrina. I missed some of your beginning of the conversation, but I think it's a great topic. And you were asking, why do you think our community has such a stigma about seeking outside help?
Mm-hmm.
I think there's some shame attached to it. You know, we're supposed to be strong, powerful people, and, you know, and there's some shame attached to asking for help from people outside of your family and your clergy, because it's looked at as a weakness. That's my opinion.
Right. Okay, that's true. I know from the olden days, grandmother used to say, oh, ain't nothing wrong with you, baby. Just pray about it. Just sit back and pray about
mm-hmm.
it.
Right.
Okay, well, after I sat and I prayed and I see God's face, you know, sometimes you still have that thing sitting on your back. And it's sometimes a lot bigger than, you know, what we think sometimes we can, you know, shoo away or brush away with prayer. You know, God gives us experienced people. You know, he gives people mm-hmm. a skill for a reason. He gives people the
right.
vision to go to school to obtain the credentials for a reason.
And I think a lot of judgment, too, within the family. You know, it's hard to talk to your family member about what your innermost thoughts are without feeling like there's some stigma attached to you within the family. Because, you know,
right.
I know the type of family I grew up in, if you tell your mother something, then your sister knows, your aunt knows, and everybody knows you're going through this hard time, and they look at you differently, and it just becomes a whole, like, family issue instead of it being your own personal thing that you're fighting with, you know. And I think that also contributes to people wanting to, you know, talk about how they feel with their family. And, you know, and if you're talking to a therapist or something, they're like, oh, you know, she's going to that hair doctor, you know. And it shouldn't be that way. I think
right.
there's a lot of people within our community because of that shame, you know, and it's unfortunate.
Right, right. Yeah, that's what sometimes I try to figure out. Why do we have to be crazy if things
mm-hmm.
that happen in our lives weigh us down to the point where we need an outlet to talk to somebody who can give us that outside perspective? Because sometimes your family might not be the ones, because they're too close to you. They've seen you go through
mm-hmm.
the situation. They go through
right.
the struggle. You know, so you might be on my side when I really don't need you to be on my side.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I need you to keep it 100 with me and tell me, hey, you know what? What you did is kind of messed up, and we need to, you know, work on a different path. Or, you know, if you're feeling like you're depressed or you feel like you have an addiction to something, somebody close to
mm-hmm.
you, you know, they be enablers in a sense. So the
and
people that are close to you and your family might not be the ones who can help you deal with that situation.
Mm. No.
No.
And I think it's a helpless situation for them to be in, too, because they don't know how to help.
Right.
But then you have the stigma, too. So it's just like one of those situations where you don't really know what to do. I personally believe in seeking outside help, but that comes from overcoming the stigma and saying, look,
right.
no one else can help me. Maybe I should try this, you know, trying something different.
Okay. All right. Well, let's give somebody else an opportunity to chime in. Thank you so much, LaVonya. Don't go anywhere. You might have something else to add to the conversation, but I definitely appreciate you.
All right, we have Cedra. Cedra, you're on the air.
Hey, Sabrina. This is Cedra, everyone. I think one of the reasons and what I see is that what our society just says with a lot of things, we weren't raised that way. So a lot of times you find that people are in the know, and even though the truth are there and they may hear this, say this, and they know, I mean, in the back of their mind that they know that their insurance offers this, but that they weren't raised to seek help professionally elsewhere. They didn't see that in their households or in the households around them growing up. So looking at it now and they're trying to do it, it's either one, they view it as if my parents didn't do it, if my grandparents didn't do it, then why do I need to? Why don't I use their
right.
same resources that they did, which was each other, or why can't I just talk to my friends and family because they listen to me anyway? So I think it's a matter of that that vicious cycle of repetition that they just don't either don't know how to break or choose not to.
But then how do we break it, I guess, is the question. Because I think with our employers and things like that, we get the education to a certain degree. Just like you said, you know, what does our insurance cover? You know, we have the EAP programs, the employee assistance programs, and things like that. And they tell you, you know, if you're feeling a hardship, like, you know, working for the government, people experience the furloughs and things like that. And all they kept saying, we have the EAP for you. We have the EAP. If the times get hard, call EAP. Well, I think some people think that, okay, EAP is not going to help me pay my bills. So what am I calling EAP for? What are they going to help me with?
But then their friends and families aren't going to help them pay it either. And I think how we break that cycle is just what you've taken the first step to do is have a conversation about it. You know, not enough parents. Not enough parents are talking to their kids, and then they're not talking to their kids because they're not talking to the right people. So with the friends, and even though we may recommend and say, hey, see someone, it may be a step further and say, hey, well, how about if you're that comfortable with having this conversation with me, how about I go to that first appointment with you, you know, where you find someone. So it's taking that next step.
So we talked about it from an adult perspective. So our duties as parents to our children. So when we think about these situations where, you know, children are hurting one another or they're hurting mass amounts of people or even the bullying factor, you know, how do we as parents with that obligation to our children reach out or how do we educate other parents to say, hey, you know, Johnny used to talk a lot. Now Johnny's not saying much of anything, and he hasn't said anything for the last 2 months. What's going on with Johnny? You know, how long as parents do we give Johnny to snap out of it, you know, so to speak? Or, you know, he's going through a phase. Well, how long does his phase start? How long does his phase take? You know, and is this really a phase? And when do we recognize that this phase needs professional attention?
So then I think then as a parent, then we have to stop looking for a timeline and looking for that perfect sign that lets us know that there's absolutely something wrong and just take heed. We all know our children, and when they start acting outside of the norm, given the society that we now live in and they're exposed to so much more, we can't take that for granted and just go with, okay, they're going through their teen phase. It's a phase. If it's that far out of the norm that you know that that's so unlike your child or they're being faced with other type of issues at school or wherever else, it's take action. It's better to be safe than sorry, and it's especially with our youth. To me, we're in a position now where this with the last incident, the parent had no idea. She's wondering what signs did she miss. Okay, well, if you see anything that starts changing and changing rapidly and your child's taking a decline, it's better to go ahead and have that conversation with a professional just to make sure everything's okay.
All right. Well, thank you for that insight. All right, let's go to Robin. Khadija, hold on. Let's go to Robin. Robin has some comments about children.
This is Robin. I think a lot of parents these days are too busy trying to be the kid's parent, be the kid's friend, and not their parents. I know when I was growing up, I didn't have privacy in my mother's house because it was her house. Anything I was involved in, my mom knew about it regardless if I wanted her to know about it or not. And I think now with a lot of kids and these parents, the parents are giving them video games or giving them monies and cell phones and dropping them off.
Mm-hmm.
And their friends, you know, they're telling them they're with their friends. But the parents aren't really checking in with the friend's parents, so they don't know what their kids are doing. Me, I know
right.
My son is doing. I'm involved whether he wants me to be involved or not. And I think a lot of parents need to start stepping up to the plate. I know they want to give their kids everything that they didn't have, but they still have to be parents. They have to parent their children.
I agree 100%. We so worried about stepping out and living our lives and things like that and making our children independent that we lose sight of what they're doing. And like you're saying, who are your friends? Who are you going somewhere with? Who are their parents? Back in the day, it was, no, you can't talk to that person. I don't know who their mother is, or you can't go spend a night at their house because I don't know what they do over there and what's going on. And we've gotten away from that. And maybe it's because some of the parents are becoming parents younger. You know, that could be the case. Or with a single-parent household, they're working 2 and 3 jobs, and they think that they just don't have the time. And when they do have the time, they want to focus the time on themselves because they're working so much. You know, but as parents, you know, we're charged with making a sacrifice. We chose to have these children, and they shouldn't be raising themselves.
And exactly, because I know even with my – I have an 18-year-old, and when he was growing up, he wanted to go over his friend's house. I needed to go to the parents' house, you know, and introduce myself. They would look at me like I was crazy. You know, I want to know what's going on in your household, like you said. I want to know, do you have guns in your household? Who's going to be in the house with
right. You,
my child and your child? Are you going to be here? Is it going to be an older sibling? Do you have a husband? Do you have a wife? These are the kind of questions I were asking, and they would really look at me like I was crazy.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean,
I agree.
And I'm one of those parents, if you want your friends to come over here, I need to speak to their parent because I need to know that their parent know you're at my house. Because if you're sneaking,
right. You
can't sneak in my house. You can't do that. I don't allow that. So,
okay.
It's crazy to me. That's all.
But as close as we may be to our children, you know, things still happen. Because there are some parents that still say, you know, I'm with Johnny every day. I pick him up from school, you know, I take him to school, you know, he does his homework here. But there are still times where children get in that reclusive state where they begin to withdraw for whatever reason. Maybe I spend a lot of time with you, but there's something going on in your school that I might not know about. Maybe there's someone bothering you that I don't know about, you know. So at what point do I say, hey, or do I ever say, hey, do you need to talk to somebody because you haven't opened up to me?
Yeah, and I think we as parents, we do need to keep the dialogue open. We need to let our kids know, you know, if anything's bothering them, they can come talk to you with no consequences. You can speak freely,
right. Respectfully.
Just let me know what's going on. And if you don't want, like you said, if you don't want to let me know what's going on, you know, I can send you to somewhere where you can talk to someone, or maybe you could talk to a friend or counseling. You can even go to your church. I mean, they have youth ministers around. It's a lot of things and a lot of places where kids can go to have an outlet. So, and like
right.
I try to tell even my kids' friends, you know, because a lot of them don't talk to their parents. And I kind of get into the conversation with them, and sometimes they forget I'm there. So you got to kind of just listen and let them talk. Because once you get them talking, they talk about everything. So you kind of down to their level so that they feel comfortable in talking to you. You know, that they know
right.
that they can say, okay, well, I'm having this issue. I'm not going to get in trouble if I just tell you what's going on. And you just try to take it that route, I guess.
So what do some of you think about the medication? Because when we get to the level of counseling, and you know that we don't want to put labels on our children. You know, everyone says, no, that child isn't ADD, or that child isn't, no, my child isn't that. But when you do finally take your child or open up and take your child to a professional, and they suggest putting your child on medication, you know, as parents, do we not want to provide our children with something that may alter their mood? You know, at what point Do we open up and allow the doctor to do his job, or do we push back and say, well, you know, no, I don't want to have my child on this medication, or no, I don't believe in this medication? What do you think about that? Because I know that there are some people who have had their children, you know, be prescribed medication, but they don't want to their child to take it because either they think it's going to make them so depressed that they stop talking, or on such a high that you can't really control their behavior.
This is Robin again. Now, I struggle with that because my child has been diagnosed with ADHD. And I struggled with it a long time before I decided to put him on medication. I did the holistic diet. I found other techniques to try to, you know, help him deal with the situation. And he wasn't anything. He just has a hard time focusing and paying attention. So for me, when I finally broke down, it took me about 4 years before I really broke down and had him medicated. And that was
okay.
He was falling behind in school, and it was really starting to affect his day-to-day. Now, I've noticed he sometimes he's willing to take it, sometimes he's not, because he said he doesn't feel like his normal self.
Right.
So, I mean, I can't speak for any other person because, like I said, he wasn't a hyper child. He just had a hard time. And I've noticed an improvement in his grades, and he seems to be happy all around now, paying attention. But it was a struggle for me. And we went through all kind of tests. I talked to all kind of doctors and psychiatrists and psychologists, and it's a struggle for parents because you don't want your child to, you know, to feel like they can't be themselves, to feel like they're zombies. You want them to be, quote-unquote, normal kids having a happy childhood. But as parents, we do have to recognize if there's an issue, you want to give your child the best possible health care that you can provide them with. And a lot, like you said, a lot of parents don't want their kids to be labeled as, you know, bipolar or ADHD or schizophrenic or whatever the mental issue may be. But if you don't get them tested, they don't get the help, then a lot of times you have a lot of these kids out here that are, you know, bipolar, and they are just spazzing out, and they don't know why, and they don't know how to control it. So
what about some of you that are really, really active in the school system? Do we think that the school systems are providing enough education to parents and to students regarding mental health? Because like we stated earlier, you know, within the corporate industry and the government industry, we have signs plastered all over the place, health and wellness, you know, if you need assistance, call and help. You know, within the school systems, do we think that there's enough education material or educational material that is provided to the parents and the students to help them, you know, cope or to help children get through or understand that there are people outside of the teachers that you can talk to when there's a situation such as bullying or intimidation or something like that? Oh, let's go to Katedra.
Okay. Absolutely not. I am totally immersed in the schools and what's going on. And no, there isn't enough education on it. You actually have to really struggle to get them to communicate with parents on topics outside a certain academic range. Period. And then when it comes to even the mental aspect of it, as a parent, when you start recognizing some challenges with your own child and take that to the school, you still have to fight a battle for them to test your child, for them to communicate with you on your options for your child. So I get this communication coming back from parents, see it in the school all the time. So that is definitely an area that we're lacking in when it comes to educating a parent on what their options are for a child and educating the child on a regular basis on, hey, this is what you can do when you want to talk to when you need to talk to someone. If you feel this way, these are what your options are. You know, they've taken a strong hold on the bullying at this point, but it's still not aggressive enough where I feel like students feel like they actually have a resource at school to go in and speak and talk open and freely without any type of consequence to it, or whether it just be a backlash or they're labeled, you know, especially if they've had any type of issues that seem like they're discipline issues, which actually may just be the stepping stone to, or they cry for help. So
does it take 10 people, 10 parents? Does it take 50 parents? So how do we get to a point where we're either enacting change within, you know, is it one school board or one school system at a time? Is it, you know, what is the process for us to come together as a people to demand this kind of education in our school system? Because, you know, we have to start somewhere. Bullying is still rampant. They can have as many campaigns and posters about bullying as they want to, but from a social perspective, it's very hard for a child to accept the fact that, you know, I can go to a teacher without repercussion from the people that are bullying me. So I think that we still have a long way to go when it comes to that whole bullying factor, you know, that whole see something, say something, come to me, come to your principal kind of a thing. You know, so for parents, you know, how do we get the school system to listen to say that we need more education in an area of counseling outside of the school counselor, counseling outside of the teachers? Like, how do we move forward as a body to get those things done if we think that they're important?
It's really, in my opinion, it takes one to start it and have a mission and a drive and to go at it hard and then get the parents on board. Whether parents know it or not, their voice is louder than what they think it is. If they enough, go through the right channels and take the appropriate action, not going up to the school cussing and fussing and making an uproar, but actually taking some type of proactive approach to it, they can get things done. Will it be done overnight? No. Could you possibly make changes in your own school before you are able to make changes countywide? Absolutely. But it's a matter of taking that initiative and that drive and going with it. Because For the school that my son goes to, he's in a charter school. So we have more of an opportunity to make some changes if you speak loud enough within the school, because we under county regulations, but they still can operate some things within their own range as long as they aren't violating county rules. But again, it takes an active approach, and it takes education of the parents, because there are so many parents that sit back and they have the same issues, but they don't know what to do. They don't.
Right.
If they feel like, okay, well, I've gone to the school, which is what they feel their resource is, but the school isn't doing anything. I've gone to the counselor, but the counselor isn't doing anything. Okay, what do I do next? I don't know what to do. And sometimes they just get what do you say? They're at a loss and they get stuck. So it's the education of the parents and getting them on board. You take that drive, you take that initiative. If you can make moves with it.
Okay. Definitely. So what happened to our drive as parents then?
Right, but it goes back to, it's something you said and Robin said, it goes back to one, parents acting more as a friend to their parents, I mean to their children, than as their parents. Another goes back to there are more and more children having kids earlier, at an earlier age. And
right.
So they're not knowledgeable, and there isn't someone giving them that knowledge. And then another problem that I see is that we, as a society, and I mean, this is nothing new. This is generational. We always want better and want more for our child. Our parents want it better and more for us. We want better and more for them. But in doing that, I think there are certain things, it goes back to what you were saying about, okay, having them be independent. I think there are certain things that parents have stepped back in their role of that they should not have. I think there are certain expectations that they have of their children that are unreasonable and they should not have because they are still children. And I just think they give them too much and don't expect enough of them. So as parents, we have to assume our role as their caretaker, their provider, their advocator, and make ourselves knowledgeable. When we want to know something about a reality show, we find out a way how to figure it out. So the same way we put in that much drive to find that out, we need to put that drive in to find out what we need to do to make this better for our children.
Okay, okay. All right, well, thank you so much for that. Let's go to 5310. I think my first lady is on the phone.
Oh.
Congratulations.
Hey, how you doing, honey?
Oh, what? How are you?
I'm doing fine. Congratulations on your show.
Why, thank you. Thank you. I really appreciate that.
Yes. I heard some of what you were saying. You're doing a good job.
Thank you. So you're in the school system.
Yes.
So do you have any words of inspiration or encouragement when it comes to what we can do to help our children when it comes to the need of counseling?
To the need of counseling.
Anything that you've experienced?
Well, by me being in early childhood, mostly what we have counseling for is for children who have like ADHD, who some children have anger management problems. A lot of them are in single-family homes. Some are being raised by the dad. Some is being raised by the mom. Some parents have recently got divorced, and the father has left. In those type of situations, when we have parent-teacher conference, a lot of things come out in those conferences by talking to the parent, because if the child in the class is a normal child doing normal things, then all of a sudden the attitude changes, the disposition change, how they treat their peers change, then that sends up a red flag for the teacher, if the teacher really knows their children. And by me having a small class, I know my children. I know when they have done something, if someone said that they did something, and I know when they're sick, I know when they're not feeling well. I treat them just like they're my own children. And also, when I talk to the parents, or I have to call the parent on the phone, the first thing I'll say, is there something going on that I need to be notified of? Or, children change when there's a new baby coming, those type of things, because they've been the baby for so long. So all of a sudden someone else is coming in and taking up their place. And so, they don't know how to adjust to that. And I talk to the parents, tell them you need to have the child involved. If you can, take them to, some of your appointments, take them to see, the sonogram, of their sister or brother. Because you can get a lot more accomplished by including them than excluding them, that type of thing. And some parents just come and they just talk. And sometimes you just need a sounding board. All you need to do is just listen and tell them that, I explain to them, I'll be praying for you and your family for you to make the best decision that will, help you and your family, those type of things. Right. And sometimes I talk to them, invite them to church. And that type of thing. And I told them, whatever decision you make, your son or daughter, they're going to be fine. And you're going to be fine. Because, you have to be. You have to be fine.
Right.
And, and I think just being down to earth, and just listening and just talking, not trying to criticize, not trying to tell them that this is one thing is better than the other. No, that's not a time and place for that. They just want someone to listen and give them some
right.
type of guidance, you know. And a lot of times I tell
that in your grade level, the
mm-hmm.
early education, that
mm-hmm.
there's more of a nurturing spirit at that age group, whether it's, you know, the pre-kindergarten, kindergarten up until that fifth grade, that elementary school bracket.
Right.
The teachers, the instructors, the caregivers are more nurturing and more accepting of helping the parent and helping the parent and the family work through. And then once kids reach that middle school, high school age, there's kind of a point where, all right, now the teachers have to teach. It's like they don't have time to kind of
right.
care anymore or as much. And I don't know if it's because they have more students, more classes, you know, they have too many kids to have to worry about. You know, we lose that care and that attention once kids cross over that threshold from, you know, that fifth grade or sixth grade
mm-hmm.
to middle school. And I think that, you know, unfortunately, it, you know, I don't hear people talk about it very much, but I think that it causes a disservice to our children at that
mm-hmm.
point, because that's the critical age. That's when kids really need to be heard. You know, the formative years where they're in grade school are critical too, but when they reach that middle school, high school age,
right.
and they don't feel like they're being heard or no one cares, then that's when we begin to lose them.
As,
you know, we begin to lose them. They begin to shut down and things like that,
mm-hmm.
and there aren't people, you know, like you who want to take time to listen to the parents, to listen to the child, to take the time to stay after school, to figure out what the problem may be so that we can educate them on the next steps.
There is a 50-50 disconnect when children go to middle school, but I also
mm.
believe that there are teachers in middle school and high school that do care. But then, you know,
mm-hmm.
you gotta be careful too when you get to that middle school and that high school. You know,
mm-hmm.
People take things and misconstrue them, and then teachers
true.
Are being, you know, they get in trouble. See, like mm-hmm. at my level, you know, my children come up and hug me. I hug them back. They give me a kiss on the cheek. Those type of things, you know, very affectionate. But, you know, someone from the outside looking in don't know anything. They could take that as some type of abuse, sexual, whatever. You understand what I'm saying? So even
right.
when you get to middle and high school, with so much that has gone on and things that are still going on, teachers are a little bit more standoffish, you know, versus, you know, trying to get involved. Because, you know, as
right.
soon as you get involved, someone says, they make any type of accusation and turn it into a truth. You see what I'm saying? Because
right.
it depends on who
uh-huh.
you're talking to. So, you know, but I believe that there are teachers out there that care, that have that sounding ear, and they are willing to help, and they're there to help, and they're willing to listen. But, you know, society has made things kind of bad for teachers, and I'm not
mm-hmm.
saying that all teachers do things like that, but you know, you only need a few to give teachers a bad name. You only need a few, you know. But there are teachers out there, I believe, that do care and are willing to help the children along the way. But you know, also in between that, the parent and the child have to be being willing to listen and accept what, you know, a teacher may have to say. Now, everything that, you know, the teacher say, you know, you may not want to hear. You know, it's the truth. And then once you sit back,
right.
you say, yes, you know, that is the truth. You know, once you sit back and you look at it and say, you know, I could have did X, Y, and Z differently, and my child
mm-hmm.
could have been here or there. So, you know, it, and I think it depends on the person and it depends on the teacher.
Mm-hmm.
How far they want to extend themselves out there, but
right.
like I said, teachers. There are a lot of good teachers out there. There are a lot of loving teachers out there There are a lot of teachers that are willing to help children. But also, when you get to high school, when you get up to high school, now, if the teacher's trying to help you and you believe that you know more than the teacher, then that's not too much more that the teacher can do. You know, when you decide that you don't want to come to class, you skip school. You know, sometimes, you know, they call and let the parent know. The other times they may not call and let the parent know. And then you don't find out anything until your child has failed their classes.
Right.
You know? And then all the time, the teacher could have been telling you all the time that he or she needed help in this area. And, you know, maybe a tutor or something like that, you know, would help. And, you know, some parents take on the attitude, my child don't need any help. You see what I'm saying? But the teachers are with the children more than actually with their parents. So you get to see it. You get to see a whole lot that goes on with the child. So, you know, it all depends on the teacher, and it also depends on the parent, and it also depends on the student being receptive of what the parent may have to say or what the teacher may have to say in order to help the student get to where they need to be. Now, I'm a school teacher. I don't claim to know it all.
Right.
You know, children teach you the same way an adult can teach you something. Children can teach you a lot of things, too, because some of them act like they've been here before. So, but, you know, you should always be open to learning more, and also sometimes you have to listen versus talking.
Okay. Well, First Lady, I definitely think.
You're quite welcome.
That's right. Well, I thank you. We're about to take a break. I don't want you guys to hang up. I want to take a couple minutes, give me a drink of water, and we're going to come right back because I have a couple more comments to make. I want to give some people a chance to chime in with maybe some of their experiences and some of their opinions. I have a little story of my own to share, and I will share that directly after the break.
Have you ever loved somebody the way God loves somebody? And he loves you. Have you ever loved someone? Have you ever loved somebody the way that he loves somebody? Have you ever loved somebody the way he loves somebody? Have you ever loved somebody the way he loves somebody? Somebody like you, yeah. Somebody like you, yeah. Oh, have you ever loved somebody the way you love somebody? Have you ever loved somebody the way you love somebody? Have you ever loved somebody the way you love somebody? Somebody like you, yeah. Somebody like you, yeah. Have you ever loved? Have you ever loved? Have you ever loved? Have you ever loved? Have you ever? Hey, have you ever loved? Have you?
Okay.
Somebody like you, yeah.
Hello, hello. We are back. I have my water. And we are back on the topic of counseling, the stigma of counseling. As a community, why do we think that it's not common or not acceptable for us to seek counseling for our loved ones? And I said that after the break I would share a personal story, and I am ready to share my personal story. I have a 5-year-old, and he is very active, very engaged, very articulate. But my five-year-old began to bite his nails. He began to bite his nails down to the nubs. So there was one day where his fingers began to bleed. So we kind of take it as, okay, this is something that he's going through. It's a phase. He'll get through it. Well, another day, he was sitting on a toilet biting his toenails. So we're trying to figure out, wait a minute, why is he sitting on the toilet biting his toenails down to the nub to where they bleed? And he just said, you know, I'm sorry. I don't know why I do it. Then we get to the point where he's biting the skin on his fingers. You take him to the doctor. The doctor can't really explain it. Oh, put something on his hands, and maybe he'll stop. Or put something on his nails, maybe he'll stop. Well, at this point, as a parent, we're saying it's time to take him to a professional because I don't feel, as a parent, that it's healthy. I don't feel that the physician is giving us enough tools and resources to allow us to understand why he is biting his nails. Is it nervous energy? Does he have so much on his mind that he can't get it out and he's just biting away? We're clueless, and it hurts me to my heart to see him continually bite his skin down to where his fingers begin to hurt in order for him to button the buttons on his shirt. I mean, I've never seen such a thing, but, you know, because we understand that we don't know it all, you know, we pray about it. He continues to bite. We pray about it. We talk to him. He continues to bite. But there's something going on in his head that tells him that either this is something that's of comfort to him, it's something that makes him feel good, it's something that deflects his attention or his activity. I'm not really sure what it is, but I'm not qualified to understand what it is, and I haven't been given a clear direction as to what it is. So now it's time to make the appointment to go and sit my five-year-old down with a counselor, because maybe because he's not able to articulate to us, maybe there are some things that a counselor may notice or may see that we don't see. You know, maybe it's something with a sibling. Who knows? Maybe it's something at school that we're overlooking. But, you know, as a parent, it's time for us to understand, like I said, that we don't know everything. And, you know, it's time to say, all right, let me get someone who is a professional who's maybe seen this before. You know, just like we said, we don't know everything. We haven't seen everything. But maybe these professionals who have been skilled and have been working with other clients for years have seen this type of behavior and can kind of pinpoint a reason as to why someone that young does something like that. Because right now it's finger biting, it's nail biting, it's biting to the skin, you know, but that can turn into other things. It can turn into a cutting addiction. You know, is that something that just feels so comfortable for him and so relaxing for him that he escalates to something else? Well, I don't think that my heart could bear anything else other than that. So he's only five, but like I said, it's time to make that appointment because we don't want our child to be a statistic that's lost because we didn't take the time to give him the care or send him to the professional, you know, that he needs. And prayerfully, you know, we're pointed in a direction of someone that can definitely help him. But, you know, we have to kind of pull ourselves up by our bootstraps and get our child some help. So that is my personal story that I thought I would share with you guys. And, you know, maybe the next time we speak, I have an update as to why he's doing what he's doing, but trust and believe, someone's going to give us some answers. Let's see. Let's go back to Miss Lavanya. Hello? Hey. So
thanks
do you
for
have
sharing
any
your personal
family
story.
Oh, no, you know, you have to, you know, feel comfortable enough and you know, how do you allow people to share themselves with you if you're not willing to share, you know?
I agree.
I'm as open as I can try to be, you know, things happen and life happens. So, you know, and maybe there's someone out there who has a child who has experienced something similar. Who knows?
Right.
But the only way that we know is if we can share amongst one another, you know, and maybe someone can recommend a good psychologist or something that I can take my baby to. Who knows?
Mm-hmm.
In the Temple
right.
Hills area, I'll go as far as Clinton, I'll go as far as Greenbelt or whatever. But, you know, I definitely need to make sure that he's cared for. You know, our children are our precious commodities, and if we don't invest our time in them and invest our resources in them, you know, we can't expect society to take on the issues that are created within our households. You know, it's not fair. It's not fair to everybody else. So as long as we do our due diligence to make sure that, you know, we, number one, protect them, number two, hold them close, and,
right.
you know, make sure that they get the care that we need, you know, hey, we're halfway there.
Exactly.
So do you have a personal child story or relative story or personal story?
Sure.
That you would like
actually,
to
I like what one of the participants was sharing about how she was struggling with medicating her son, and I just really commend
yeah.
her for taking all the steps that, you know, I think nobody wants to put their child on medication, but when you exhaust all the possibilities, and that's kind of like my personal story, too. I have a teenage daughter who was battling with some stuff and some depression, sleeping, eating,
mm-hmm.
you know, just going to school and coming home, and I noticed a shift in her, and I tried everything I could, and this is after the counseling, and this is after talking to her, this is after, you know, having her talk to,
mm-hmm.
you know, people within the family who were dealing with it, talking to her cousins and everything, and finally I had to make a decision, you know, do I want to lose her or what's left of her, or do I want to look into other alternatives than just therapy? And I made a decision to put on presence, and it was the best thing I could have done. You know, and sometimes you have to make those hard decisions, and
right.
I lost her already, so it wasn't about, you know, changing her into a different person or making her feel different than who she was. I was trying to get a part of her back. And I
right.
think that it's the last alternative for me. You know, it has to be the last option, but it was an option that I was willing to try to save a piece of her and to salvage a piece of her. And now she's going great. It's in her last year of high school, and, I mean, and this was in the ninth grade, and it was terrible for her. She just wanted
oh,
to go
wow.
to school and come home and go to sleep, and now she's vibrant and she's doing her thing. So.
Yeah, and those are the kind of success stories that, you know, some people need to hear that may be struggling with, you know, do I want to take my child to a counselor? You know, maybe
mm-hmm.
it's not time yet. Let me give them a little while longer. Maybe they'll snap out of it. You know, well,
right.
we put a time frame on when someone's going to snap out of it. It's, the sooner,
right.
the better. You know, you never know if that next day could be the turning point in that young child's life.
Agreed.
So it's like, you know, take yourself outside of yourself sometimes and, you know, make that sacrifice and do something that's going to be beneficial to the child and not think about what other people think about you or what other people are going to think about your child, you know, because you only have to tell people what you want them to know. You know, if you don't want to tell anybody, then it's your preference. Take them to a
right.
counselor, do it in secret, do it in private, or if you think that you need more of a support system, then, hey, then it's
mm-hmm.
your prerogative to share, you know, with your loved ones or with your family or people who you know are genuinely concerned about you and are down for you 100%, who won't go behind your back and kind of talk about you, you know, like someone
right.
was saying earlier, like you were saying earlier, you know, the stigma. People talk about you. People say that you're crazy or,
mm-hmm.
or you're this, or kids talk about, you know, other kids and say, you know, they're going to a doctor. Because we're quick, and sometimes you think, you're quick to tell someone, I went to the doctor, I got a checkup. They told me, you know, I got to get a hysterectomy or I got to do this or
mm-hmm.
I got to get a bunion off of my toe. Well, why are you telling people that you had to get a tooth replaced or you got to get surgery? I'm
mm-hmm.
trying to figure
mm-hmm.
out why is that so accepting and going to care about your mental state, going to see about your mental
right.
state is such a secret. You know, if anything, I don't want you
I
to know that
too.
I got a medical condition that I got to
like.
Take care of.
I knew exactly what it looked like. I battled depression, too. And the funny thing is she didn't even take my testimony because she was going through her own battle, and she couldn't relate to my testimony, me saying, you know, this is what I see, here are some things I see, you know, in your behavior. She had to go to somebody who was not emotionally attached, like myself, and see a therapist to get her moving in the right direction. Because she couldn't even take it from, you know, my words that I see this change in you. She became defensive and, you know, oh, I'm not you, and, you know, all that stuff. So just removing her, taking her out of it emotionally for me and giving it to, you know, letting her talk to a professional about it helped both of us, you know. And now she's doing great, and it's just wonderful to see.
Praise God.
Mm-hmm.
About to go to school and start her life.
Yeah.
That's good. Now she has been given the tools to be able to cope, because once they step out of high school and life begins, and that's when the real work starts. Some of them don't have the tools and the resources. You know, some of them aren't connected to a good church or someone, you know, they don't have a good role model or a mentor that helps them through these obstacles or gives them the tools or the resources to be able to cope. You know, journaling, I found was a good mechanism, you know, for some children that have gone through counseling. Then the counselor tells them, okay, when you feel like, you know, you can't take it or you feel like things are so overwhelming, then jot it down, write about it. If you don't have someone right there that you can talk to, grab a book and begin to unload it in a book, journal it. Then you can go back and look at it the next day, because the next day you might not even be feeling like that. But then you go back to what you felt 2 days later and you're looking at, wow, what inside of me made me feel so low that I wrote that? You know, and maybe they think, you know what, life isn't really so bad because today was a stellar day. Today, the sun shined all day, even if it was raining. You know what I mean?
Right.
But it gives them an avenue or tool or resource to be able to jot something down that they don't think that they can share, and they can tuck it away, they can burn it, they can do whatever, and kind of move on to the next day, you know, until they are able to talk to someone that they trust. So, you know, I think that as a society, we need to, you know, and like we were talking about with Khatijah, you know, how can we move forward to impress upon our school systems to provide more education, more educational resources when it comes to counseling and the need for counseling and behaviors and changes within kids? Like, we have posters about everything else. We have posters about safe sex or contraception and all that. And, you know, we talk about drunk driving initiatives and, you know, cell phone and bullying and things like that. Well, the mental state of a child, I think, is if not more important than some of these other issues that are high on the ticket when it comes to our educational system, you know. And it's like, as a people, you know, when do we make moves? Back in the day, we had our parents and our grandparents, they always moving about something. You know, it's a movement. It's a discussion. It's a, we going to fight and band together to make these changes and things like that. Well, you know, we need to band together, you know, and maybe this forum is one that invokes change. Let's go to Khatijah.
Yes, ma'am.
Hello.
Hey, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
Oh, okay. All right. I thought I had it still on mute. Yes, I think what you started may be that car that you know that drives that avenue of thought and change. Maybe this form would be exactly what we need. Pushing.
Yeah, we got to start somewhere.
Exactly. It's just I think more and more, and just listening to everyone, it's being able. It's just like Lavonnie said. It's seeing that change in your child, and then taking an active approach to it. Not that approach of that it can't be my child. I don't want it to be my child. Okay, no one wants it to be their child, but you can ignore any signs that you see. So it's taking an active approach and making sure that they get the help that they need. It's just like it's just like you with JJ. Okay, the doctor can say what the doctor wants to say, but you know your child better than that doctor. So just to tell me it's okay when I know it's not okay, then no, then we're going to take the next step and go for the next approach. And that's what more parents have to do. They can't, when you know, it's just like if you go to the doctor and you feel like you're sick and your doctor tell you nothing mm-hmm. is wrong, okay, you're ready to get a second opinion and get another doctor.
Exactly.
It can be exactly. different with our children out here. If what someone is telling us, we know our child better than anyone else, and just because they say everything is okay, it doesn't mean that it is. And if we know that it's not, we take the next approach. And then like what Robin was saying, because I know some of the things, even when the parents go, they talk to the schools are quick with wanting to push medication as being a first option. And a parent has to advocate for their child and make sure they get the second opinion, get the third opinion if necessary. Find the right doctors for your child. That as much as you're going to advocate for your child, that the doctor is going to do so as well. So that if their mm-hmm. first option is always medication, then that may not be the right fit for your child. It's giving you the reality of what may be needed, but here are some other options, the avenues that we can take first. So, I mean, I just can't stress enough that as parents, we have to first watch and know our child. Watch and know
right.
your child. If there's no one else that's going to notice a difference, then who else? Then who is?
Exactly. Exactly. Okay. Well, you all have definitely given me some items to think about because we do not have enough movements out there. They have movements on same-sex marriage. They have movements on, rights for every group of people, but what about some additional rights for our children? You know, how do we begin to make moves to say, okay, this is something that's important to me. This is something that's screaming out for our communities, and this is something that we need to provide education to our parents and our children on that's not even really being spoken in the schools. So I think we have some thinking to do, and, you know, I'm going to sleep on this one. I'm going to pray on it to see, you know, what God says about the direction that we need to go. And maybe I can solicit some of you who are within the school systems to aid in this walk, because, you know, the mental health is, you know, very critical. It affects our homes, it affects our children, and it affects our communities, as we can see, you know, the violence that kind of erupts when some people don't get the help that they need. So if you have some ideas, just email me. My email address is Sabrina, Sabrina, speaks, Speaks, dot HOGBC, as in Heart of God Baptist Church, at gmail.com. That's Sabrina, Sabrina, speaks, Speaks, all one word, dot HOGBC at gmail.com. And I thank you all for listening. I thank you all for calling in and giving your words of wisdom, your suggestions, your words of inspiration, your stories. And we'll let you know when we're back on again. Thank you so much. I really appreciate you all. God bless.